The recordings have been started.
Thank you, Sharon. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 24th of August. We have Alan Greenberg, Mike O'Connor, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Tatiana Kramtsova, Oliver Hope, Paul Diaz, Barry Cobb, James Bladel, Ted Suzuki, Mason Cole. From staff, we have Glenda Saint-Géry, Marika Konings, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and we have apologies from Ron Wickersham, Siva Mutasami, Michaeli Nalon, and I believe Jeff Newman. If I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Okay. Thank you, Gisela. In accordance with the new working group rules, we're supposed to check for changes in statements of interest or conflicts of interest at the beginning of every meeting. The rules formally call for a roll call, but I think we will replace them with asking for, is there anyone who needs to inform us of any changes? Not hearing any or seeing any hands, we'll assume there are none. I see we have Oliver Hope on the call, and I don't believe you've participated in these calls before, or maybe I missed you. Would you like to introduce yourself?
No. Hi. Yeah. I'm here from Mesh Digital Limited or DomainMonster.com. I'm new to the groups really, and sort of started getting involved in this side of thing since Brussels. But since then, I actually got married and went off on honeymoon, so it kind of knocked out the me being around until around about now. So that's me in a nutshell. Looking forward to getting involved.
Well, you haven't missed a lot because we in fact haven't done an awful lot of work since then. I believe we only had one meeting. So welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. On the agenda today is the analysis of the public comments and the survey, which Marika has been doing significant work on. And I'd like to add one item on there that arose out of the discussions. If you'll remember, quite a while ago, we talked about the issue of can a registrant transfer a domain post-expiration. And the general consensus was, yes, they can. ICANN Compliance came up with a slightly different answer, and I'd like to raise that issue when we have the time, either at the end of this meeting or at the next one. So I'm going to turn this over to Marika to lead us through the summary of the analysis of the public comments and the survey.
This is Marika. What you see up on the Adobe Connect is the actual summary of the public comments. I don't know if you want to go through them one by one, or how would you do? Do I assume that everyone has reviewed them? I mean, something that we've done for some of the other groups is I've prepared a more detailed grid that helps to go through the different comments instead of using this summary as the basis. I don't know if that will be helpful for the next meeting and now having a more general overview.
I would suggest, we should have talked about this ahead of time, and we both of us have been slightly busy. Why don't we do just a quick summary, and then try if you can try to present it in grid form at the next meeting, that would be useful. But just perhaps quickly summarize. I hope most of us have looked at either the actual comments, the raw comments, or your summary, but perhaps you can just give us a quick overview for those who haven't had the chance.
Okay. So first on the public comment forum, there were actually nine community submissions from nine different parties. You can see a list on page one and two, some even by members of the working group, and actually a number of the constituencies and stakeholder groups submitted comments as well as the at-large advisory committee. And I'll leave the survey for maybe after this, because there's a separate document that goes over the main results of that. To my great surprise, when I came back from vacation, I saw that instead of 12 submissions that had been made before I left, there were now 412 responses. So what I've done is basically create a separate document with the main highlights of the survey, basically summarizing the percentage questions, and I've created a separate annex that provides an overview of all the separate submission text submissions that have been made to facilitate review, as I think the annexes take up almost 100 pages because a lot of additional comments and suggestions were made there.
Marika, we've always been told that vacations are good for us. We just didn't realize this kind of result.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't go for another week, as I'm not sure what would have happened then. So, moving into the summary and analysis, there's one comment. There was one comment by George Kirikos that I think he has been posting to most of the different public comments that are open, asking the question whether making comments is relevant, because he doesn't seem to believe that public input is actually valued. So I hope that the working group can prove him wrong and review these comments, of course, in detail and then show that they were taken into account. Then there were a number of general comments, one from the registrar stakeholder group. I think a point that has been made on numerous occasions as well in the working group, the lack of data, and encouraging as well the working group to make sure that any potential outcomes of this group, you know, don't have any unintended consequences linked to them. The CBUC, the business constituency submission, contained a detailed response to the working group survey, so that the survey that the working group itself took as part of the report. So I would encourage everyone to have a look at that if they want to see their more detailed conclusions or responses in relation to those questions. And also the chart that Mike, I think, already circulated as well to this group on showing the post-exploration process basically as a demonstration of, you know, how complicated that is and the inconsistencies that registrants are facing as a result. The registry stakeholder group also made a point out of the fact that the report actually doesn't contain any recommendations or draft recommendations, and is encouraging the working group that once it gets to that stage, that there will be another opportunity for public comment before the report is finalized and submitted to the GNSO Council. So then there are a number of responses that specifically provided input on the charter questions. On the charter question one, it was both Michaela and the registrars are of the opinion that there is adequate opportunity to redeem expired domain names. On the charter question two, there's another comment from Michele, who actually suggested that maybe this question should be slightly reformulated and talk more about whether registrants are aware of what can happen and will happen to their domain names after they expire, noting that this is linked to the point of education, which comes back later on as well. The registrar stakeholder group points out that they are already required under the EDDP to provide that kind of information on their website, and they're of the opinion that the information that is provided is clear and conspicuous. On charter question three, again, Michaela and the registrar stakeholder group are in agreement that a sufficient notice is given, as multiple notifications are sent by most registrars. On charter question four, there's again agreement between Michaela and the registrar, the registry stakeholder group, that, and I think the registrars as well, that clarification of who is output might be worth exploring further. Michaela notes as well that a holding page, if one is used, should contain a notice that the registration has expired and then information how it can be renewed. The registry stakeholder group points out as well, if the working group does consider a clarification of who is output, that it might not need to make a distinction between thick and thin registries, as it would apply to both.
Marika, I have a question on that. The registry paper talked a lot about the thick versus thin. I don't recall us making a big distinction in our report. Am I forgetting it, or?
I'm not sure. I would need to look back if we call that thick registry.
Certainly in our discussions, we always said thick, thin, the registrant should get useful information. It may be easier to implement in one versus the other. But I don't recall the paper actually making this a strong distinction of recommending it for one and not the other. James?
Yes, Alan, I was going to mention I also don't remember whether or not the paper made a distinction, because I don't know that we made the distinction. If we're just talking about things such as create and expiration dates, those should be available in both, as opposed to other contact information, which would only be available in a FIC registry.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm confused as to why they're making the distinction.
Maybe we could ask
for clarification. Why does it matter?
Well, I understand why it might matter in the implementation, and we may have alluded to that somewhere, but I don't think we made a statement saying we want to see it in one and not the other. So I think we need to go back and perhaps get back to the registry constituency, registry stakeholder group on that one. And Marika, if you could perhaps set a reminder that we do look into that and then get back to them. Because certainly what they're recommending, I think, is what we were saying all along, that the implementation may differ, but the intent is uniform across the two.
Okay, I'll check what's in the report. And
okay.
I guess it might be helpful to check back. I presume Michael Young was involved in drafting this, so maybe it's worth checking with him as a member of the working group.
Right. Okay,
then
sorry.
Then they make a second point, a technical point, in which I know that it's important to keep in mind that auto renewed and in grace period are actually not EPP statuses. So if it is reported in WHOIS output, it should not be shown as a status. I'm not really sure what that means, but I'm sure the technical people amongst us will know what to do with that.
Well, luckily most registrants don't know about EPP statuses, so I think we know what our target is.
So, and then they know that if this would be recommended, it might be worthwhile to consider recommending that the same is done for other similar periods. And they also note if it's recommended that registries do this, then it should also be recommended for registrars.
Yep.
The registrar stakeholder group doesn't believe that additional measures need to be taken, although they do recognize that there might be confusion related to WHOIS and messages, and they actually propose to work together with the registry stakeholder group to see what could be done in that regard. So in charter question 5, Michaela believes that there should be no transfer allowed during the RGP. The registry stakeholder group makes this point that at this point in time, or they talk about the original intention behind the RGP and what is current practice, basically noted that the way the system works now in the auto renew grace period, there's no guarantee that the person, but the original registrant is the one trying to redeem the name, and how they can actually go about that, and who has actually the right to initiate a transfer, and how can a registry actually identify the initiating or original registrant if they're actually no longer the current registrant of records? There are a number of questions that they raise in relation to this question, and I think as a result of that, they would prefer to keep RGP and transfer as separated events. And the registrar stakeholder group also recognizes that this is a complex question, and if it is to be further pursued, I think they are of the opinion that a different or future working group might be convened to specifically look at that question. So I've grouped together a number of desired outcomes, and several of the comments people explicitly stated what they would like to see as the outcome of this working group. So the ALAC statement knows that they would like to see a level of predictability and security and as an outcome, and they list a number of different requirements that they would like to see in the form of consensus policies. I think you can look through the 9 different items that they've provided here. But I think it links to several of the questions that map to the survey, and they could take the option of having consensus policy recommendation in that regard. They do note that there might be a need for some limited exceptions, and also recognize that there might be a role for best practices above this minimum set of requirements. Jonathan Frakes, he points out that, of course, the obvious solution is to actually pay before a domain name expires. I think something we've talked about in the group as well. He would also welcome an outcome of best practices and or consensus policies, also noting that there should be some kind of minimum baseline that would also provide like a consistent experience for registrants, of which the community then can be informed and be made aware. Registry stakeholder group also emphasizes this importance of consistency and transparency, and they note that the idea of registrars displaying explicit information around their domain expiration processes would be helpful for registrants. IR had a short comment in which he basically noted that the drop recovery policy is unfair, and he talks about a system whereby basically everyone would have the same opportunity to recover a domain name following expiration. The CBUC, the business constituency, is also the position that consensus policy changes would be appropriate, and they also talk about the issues of openness, transparency, and predictability in relation to post-expiration practices. Then there were several comments that pointed to the importance of education and information. Jonathan Frakes, amongst others, he provided some examples of maybe developing a diagram and a narrative that could be made, could be developed once the working group has finalized its recommendation that, you know, possibly could be put on websites by ICANN or used as a way to explain to registrants what happens after post-expiration and what they can expect. He also uses an example of this misunderstanding, a specific comment that was made where someone was pointing out that, in their view, their domain name shouldn't have expired or shouldn't, after expiration, still should have been granted to them as they had a trademark in that specific name. And there seems to be, according to him, a common misunderstanding that there's no exception for a trademark linked to expiration of a domain name or, you know, the different rules apply. Mikhail also points out that, you know, more time and energy should be spent on educating registrants and making sure that they take care of their issues before domain name actually expires. And the business constituency also proposes to create some kind of consumer education, possibly sponsored by ICANN, around the expiration of domain names. In relation to auto-renew grace period, the registry stakeholder group actually points out that apparently we indicate somewhere that all registries use the same auto-renew practices, and they point out that it's actually not the case, as there are some differences in when registries actually charge auto-renews, so that might be something that needs to be updated in the report. Then some comments in relation to the redemption grace period. This is, again, something that came up before as well, that assumptions related when the redemption grace period was developed no longer seem to apply. So they're raising the question whether the auto-renew grace period still offers opportunity and the RGP, and whether they're noting that, you know, as the intended goal at this stage of the RGP cannot be guaranteed by the behavior of registries alone. So they actually note that if the original intentions of the RGP are still valid, there would be a need to actually apply it consistently by all parties involved. And if that would be the case, they would be willing to explore the RGP as a consensus policy. Then there were some other issues raised that didn't really seem to fit with any of the previous categories. There was one issue raised by Jonathan, who pointed out that he had experienced registrars trying to invoice registrants for domain names that had expired but had already moved to another registrar before that time. He's wondering whether a registrar should be required to actually check with the registry that they are still the registrar of record for the name before they actually send billing and related materials to registrants. The business constituency listed as well a number of issues that they would like the working group to explore in further detail. A number of terms they would like to see addressed that are confusing, the use of domain status flags. I mean, some of the points linked to some of the charter questions, but as well some new issues. For example, the conflict of interest point in the last sentence, whether Vetcher either generates revenue from renewal or the aftermarket activities.
Marika, on Jocelyn's comment, I didn't catch that when I read his comment directly. I think what he's saying there is there are cases where a registrar, where a domain is transferred from registrar A to registrar B, but registrar A still invoices it after expiration or after the expected expiration. And he's suggesting they check with the registry to see if they're still the registrar of record. It's a little bit scary if a registrar has transferred a domain away, but their records don't indicate that. Am I reading that correctly?
That's how I read his comment as well. I don't know if that has something to do with, you know, records are maybe kept differently from the administration billing department and, you know, the technical side. But I see James raising his hand, so maybe he has some insight on them.
I can certainly imagine it if the domain is transferred a month before renewal time and the records lag. But anything else, I guess I question James.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of in the same boat here. I would state that if a registrar is unknowingly or through error or confusion billing for a name that's already transferred, then I'm not sure that a policy can clear that up. And if they're knowingly doing it and collecting money for names that they don't manage anymore, that's fraud and call the cops. I don't really know where to go with this comment.
Thank you for saying that, because I was a little bit leery of saying it. But
well, no, I mean, I don't know where to go with this comment. It's like,
I mean, one has to add, if the timing is tight, it's understandable. Otherwise, it's either incompetence or fraud, and neither of them is all that attractive.
Well, and one is a law enforcement matter, and the other one is not likely to be fixed by anything we do here. So I guess I just don't know where to go.
Okay, I think in any case, will go back to his original comment and make sure we're not misunderstanding it, but it's a little bit interesting. Okay, Marika, back to you.
Yeah, this is Marika. And I think as well, I read somewhere where he indeed mentioned that, you know, it might just be fraud in that case. So, basically what he says, while there is a consequence to the registrar who is doing these things of chargeback or fraud charges against the registrar, placing these competent handling requirements into the rules would help to expose if these billing practices, as I've described, are deliberate or not. But I guess we can, you know, once we get to the grid, we can review that in more detail. So those were that's the main summary of the comments that were submitted as part of the public comment forum. Would you like to discuss this now in more detail or move first to the survey results?
I don't think I need, you know, clearly I think there are a few cases where we do want to follow up with people, which will prove to them, at least to some of the people, that we actually read these things. One sometimes wonders if people deliberately put things in to cause questions like that. But that would be cynical, wouldn't it be? I'm satisfied with this at this point. If you can summarize things in a nice grid, then that you know, if the effort is not unreasonable, I think that might be worth doing. Any other questions on the survey before on the comments before we go on to the survey? Okay, it's all yours.
All right, let me just pull up the survey.
Alan, this is James.
Yes, go ahead.
And this is out of fairness to Marika and also wanting to make the most of our time. I think that we should go through the surveys in a general case, but I would hesitate to go through actually going through all the annexes and reading the responses to the group over the phone. I just I feel like that's something that grown-ups should be able to do offline. That's my opinion.
I don't think anyone's going to disagree with you, and I certainly wasn't planning on looking at it at that level.
Okay, thanks. And, you know, it's for Marika's vocal cords as well as anything else.
We haven't exercised her in weeks now. We have to give her
something. Yeah, don't make that kind.
Well, James, I do appreciate your concern.
Well, I'm being selfish. We need to save her vocal cords for the next working groups this week.
Yeah, because to be fair, I mean, I haven't had the time yet to actually go into detail in the annexes, because in some of the comments that might be as well, you know, overarching theme where we can actually summarize instead of, you know, going through the 300 submissions, say, well, there's where people say email or three, or I've seen several where there seem to be, you know, similar kinds of answers that are being made, but I think that would take a little bit more time to actually analyze that information.
Yeah, there's one or two that I was going to ask questions on here, but not necessarily expecting an answer at this point. But I would say let's go ahead with it and try to understand where we're going in the future. But let you just summarize on the per question basis right now.
Okay, so the main summary is up in the Adobe Connect and is also posted on the wiki. So first question there is question 4. Should registrars offer renewals for a period of time following expiration, subject to a few explicit exceptions? So there's an overwhelming majority saying yes. 97% of respondents agrees with that statement. So here also there are 51 responses made, and I said we probably need to review that separately in one of the future meetings.
Yeah, Marika, I assume one of the things you're going to try to do, and I say try in quotations, is to see if we can generalize on affiliations to try to understand where these people came from in terms of registrars, users, and any other people with vested interest in the process.
Right, I'll definitely try, but
I said try. Okay, let's go ahead.
The next question then is question 6. Should the policy specify the minimum amount of time allowed for renewal after expiration? There again, 92% says yes, and 46 of those have actually specified for how long that should be. 3% says no, and 4% has no strong view either way.
Okay, and I think this is one of the ones where analyzing the comments will give us some information. Although I looked at some of the raw data, and some of them go all over the map, things like a year. But the sort of what bins they fall in will be interesting.
Right. The question 8, should offering renewal after expiration be a consensus policy, best practice, or as a means for registrars to offer competitive services? 84% here is of the view that it should be required by ICANN policy. 11% is of the view that it should be offered at the registrar's discretion, and 5% has no strong view either way. Then next question is question 10. Should the policy specify the minimum number of notices that are required prior to expiration? 83% says yes, 7% says no, and 10% has no strong view either way. Again, here 332 people actually provided further information on what they consider the most appropriate number of reminder messages. Question 13 then asks whether the policy should specify when such notices are sent. 76% of respondents says yes, 7 says no, and 17% has no strong view either way. Again, quite a number of people here responded as well to question 14, which asks if you answered yes to the previous question, what timing or reminder schedule would you suggest? Question 16, should the policy specify how such notices should be sent? 44% says yes. 42% of respondents say no, but the registration agreement or website should tell registrants how the registrar will contact them with reminders. 3% says no, and 11% has no strong view either way. And here again, question 17, if you answered yes or no but to the previous question, what method should it specify? 288 people provided additional details there.
Yeah, that one also should provide some interesting insight into what people think is reasonable.
So question 19 is an open question. What, in your opinion, is the most effective means to remind a registrant that their domain name is about to expire? Again, I think this is one where we need to have a closer look, where probably there's well some similarities there. We had 291 people providing further details. So on question 20, should Whois be changed to make it obvious that a domain has expired and not yet renewed by the registrant or the agent? 58% says yes, 27% says no, and 15% has no strong view either way.
This is one that I found rather curious, that 111 people said it should not be obvious from Whois whether a domain is expired or not. And I'm just wondering, did we word the question poorly? James?
Yeah, that one jumped out at me as well, Alan, when I was reading through these. And the only thing that I could come up with, and this is pure speculation on my part, is that some folks thought that perhaps indicating that a name had expired would possibly make it more vulnerable to something, hijacking or something like that. That's the only thing I could possibly think of. But yes, it did catch my attention as well.
Now, all I can imagine is we worded it, is something about the wording didn't make, because if we had asked the negative of the question, I can't believe 27% would have said yes, yes, make it obscure. So I'm not sure we're going to get any better insight, but.
This is Rick. I'm wondering as well, and as well pure speculation, whether the way we phrase it is saying, should Whois be changed? If some people are wondering whether that would mean changing the policy, whether we're actually saying should Whois status messages be changed. So I don't know if some people interpret it as well as being a more, you know.
Yeah, maybe Whois is just so fraught with the question that.
So I don't know if that might be part of the reason as well.
No. Maybe that's why we're not professional survey writers.
So moving on then to question 22. Again, 309 people responded to the question on what, in your opinion, is the most effective means of alerting a registrant that their domain name has already expired. So, again, we need to have a closer look there to see if we can group some of those answers together. Again, question 23, what, in your opinion, should be done to educate registrants to ensure that domain names are renewed without incident? 228 people provided input there. And moving on to question 24, what should happen post-expiration when a domain name is accessed via the web, when email is sent to an address at the domain or other IP services are used? 27% there says that it should stay working, if at all possible, as a courtesy to the registrant. 60% responds that it should stop working to alert registrants to the expiration, and 12% has no strong view either way. Here were quite a number of additional comments, so probably will be worth as well seeing what feedback is provided there. Question 26, should offering the RGP be mandatory for all GTLD registries? 86% of respondents say yes, 5% say no, and 10% have no strong view either way. Question 28, should offering the RGP be mandatory for all registrars? 83% there says yes, 5% say no, and 12% have no strong view either way. And question 30, should the registration agreement be required to provide predictable statements about what will happen after expiration? 86% of respondents say yes, the agreement should specify what will happen. 9% says no, but all documents on a registrar website should. Actually, 0%, two respondents say no. And 5% have no strong view either way. And I think that's it for the survey.
All right, we've completed this in record time. Anyone have any comments? We obviously have a lot of work to do. By we, of course, I mean Marika. But but we should... How to divide up this work and how to analyze it, I think, is worthy of some thought. And I'm not sure I want to conduct it online right now, but maybe on email we can talk a little bit about how to summarize these and what categories. James?
Alan, just to follow on with what you were saying, I think that the next big question in front of us is, what do we do with this? I was reading through this for the past couple of days, I think I've been sending some emails here and there about some of the things as they pop into my head, sort of stream of consciousness. So apologize if they don't make any sense. But I did come away with just a few takeaways relative to the survey. One is that I think this is a really great tool, and I'm already thinking of ways we can use it in other working groups and in other areas. Two, made mention a little bit about, you know, the anonymous participation, whether we want to discount or discard those responses or try to follow up with them if there are other identifying information and see if we can't get those folks to identify themselves as per the ICANN working group conventions and bylaws. Next, this one's a little trickier. I wanted to say that, you know, some things would seem to be clear, like when we see something is 83% in favor of this or 90%+ in, you know, against that. But I think we should be very cautious about giving into the temptation to say that something is clear, because then when you dig down into the annexes and see what people mean with the details of implementation, you know, as you mentioned, Alan, it's all over the place. And I think that that's where we get both the benefit of getting an outsider's perspective on these questions and these topics, but we also get the hindrance of having outsiders come in and weigh on topics that are below the surface a little bit more complicated than they might appear in the survey question. So I think, yes, the question in front of us is where do we go now with this? And I'm open to ideas.
Yep, I mean, exactly where we go, obviously, that's the whole issue of this whole PDP and working group. On the shorter term, I think we need to try to break the text answers down into categories so that we can get a handle on them. The 86% and 83% and 92% are not particularly surprising, because we already established way early in this working group that the majority of registrants who deal with the largest registrars already have access to these various things. So the expectation of registrants, I think, is set by the largest of the players, and it's not particularly surprising that they want to be able to redeem a name after expiration, because today the largest majority of people can. There's not a lot there that's really surprising if you analyze it from that perspective. I don't think there's big surprises, but the details may in fact be interesting, and the fact that we actually got a moderate number of people to respond, I think has a lot of value. Now, in terms of the what we do with the anonymous ones, and the anonymous ones come in a number of categories. Clearly, no identification in the world we're looking at here of surveys or email has any real value. I could have provided a survey answer for James Bladel and given your right email address, and it would look perfectly valid. But I could have answered whatever I wanted to. And in fact, if you look at the, I think it was McKaylee who referenced the bylaws on PDPs, what they actually say is comments should be accompanied by the name, the affiliation, and why the person is interested in this subject. And in fact, that level of specificity is virtually never done in any of the comments on virtually any subject. So I think we have to take following the bylaws with just a grain of salt, because the words that are there are not necessarily followed at any level. However, if you look at the list of people and say how many would we exclude if we take out the people who only gave a given name and didn't give an email address, and the count comes out to be about 60. Now, without looking at any greater detail of, you know, I can't tell the difference necessarily between a given name and a surname. So we may be excluding people who gave a surname but not a, but not no other information. But if we exclude those 60 or so, with the exception of only one or two questions, it doesn't change the overall answer. There's still going to be an overwhelming majority in one direction or another. And I wonder how much effort it's worth on Marika's part to start sifting through these one by one and trying to identify the good ones versus the bad ones, except perhaps in the situations where there really is a knife edge and we're not sure which way the question is going. Cheryl on the on chat asked, are there IP addresses? And I believe I asked Marika that, and she said no, IP addresses were not available. But there was a check to make sure the same computer, presumably through a cookie, did not answer the questionnaire twice. Marika, can you confirm I got that story right? And then we'll go to James.
Yeah, this is Marika. I didn't find a way to actually look at the IP addresses, but you're right. I did select the option that you know you couldn't submit from the same computer, so I don't know if indeed it was a cookie or you know verification of IP address. I'm not sure how, but I'm sure there's always a way around it, as with anything. But you know, it should have required someone indeed to take some additional measures if they wanted to submit it again from the same computer.
Okay, so IP addresses is not part of the information given to you, but you didn't check with the survey provider to see whether it's in fact available from their logs or something like that.
Okay. Yeah, it's basically it's an automatic system, so I can you know all the information is available to me, and I didn't see their the IP addresses. I can indeed ask them whether that's information they hold somewhere.
Probably is worth asking if it's something you think they'll respond to quickly.
Okay,
James.
Hi, James speaking, and yeah, I mean, just as an aside, we sometimes have contests or things like that with our website, and there's always ways to get around those types of things. So I would put a lot of stock in either IPs or cookies. Alan, you know, mostly I'm on board with what you were just providing there by way of a synopsis. I did. There were just a couple of points that I wanted to you know raise as you know possible areas of further discussion. And the first was that you know I. And this is consistent on all the working groups that I participate in. Okay, this is not specific to Pedner, but I feel very strongly about anonymous participation in ICANN, and I think that you know that goes hand in hand with making sure that everyone's interests are known in public. You know, so I think that you know the strictest you know taking the recommendations in the bylaws or the operating rules or whatever with a grain of salt, I think that doesn't sit well with me. I think that you know they're there for a reason. That if folks are responding in an individual capacity, they should say so and they should say who they are. I think that there are a lot of aspects on about online life where folks have come to expect or even require their anonymity be protected, and I just don't feel that this is one of them, one of those areas. I think that you know people should be willing to stand up and identify themselves. And then the second thing is, you know, as far as how much of a clear direction, you know, there are on some of these topics, I would submit that, you know, even, you know, 100% in favor of one issue or another, again, doesn't really give us a whole lot to go on until we take a look into the narrative comments and the text feedback and see, is there, you know, a clear pattern emerging here? Are they all over the map? Are some of them, you know, way off the reservation, like I should have a year to renew my year grace period tacked onto my one-year registration? And, you know, so I think that we need to sort through those things.
And keep it working for that year.
Well, yeah. That's basically, you know, I'd say we have a name for that at GoDaddy. It's called two-year registration, right?
Two-to-one deal. Sounds wonderful.
You know, and we probably would get you a nice deal on that, too, at the same time. But it's just the thing is, you know, I mean, I was kind of joking with a friend of mine that, you know, if there was a, you know, if there was a question on this survey that said domain name registration should be free and last forever, I'm sure that that would get 100% response, too. And that's all I'm going to put out there.
Well, there are people seriously saying you should be able to buy a domain name forever, not free, of course, but we didn't ask that question, and to our credit.
Yes. I'm just pointing out that there are always going to be some outliers, in these areas, and we want to make sure that they're informing our discussions, because we're the ones that have been, plowing
sure.
away on this work for about a year and not taking us off track. Thanks.
Yeah. It's unfortunate we didn't home in on some of this anonymity or the possibility of anonymity and make, for instance, email addresses mandatory. That's not to say you can't come up with who do you think I am at gmail.com and it looks like an email address, but we didn't, unfortunately. But what I was saying was I really have no trouble ignoring or extracting the number of people who are completely anonymous that didn't provide a name or an email address. I just don't think it's worth the effort. But, we can decide that further as we look at the text answers and see to what extent, taking out what is, I guess, 15% or so of the answers will likely make a real difference or not. I'm just trying to avoid doing work which won't really tell us anything and takes a fair amount of Marika's time. Do we have any more hands up? All right, we have a lot of work to do on this, but apparently no more discussion at this point. The other item I wanted to bring up is the issue of post-expiration rights. And you will recall that one of the things that we've been looking at in our internal surveys was, should a registrant have the right and the ability to do a transfer after expiration? And there is an ICANN compliance advisory which says the losing registrar should not unreasonably refuse to do the transfer. And there's a number of very specific exceptions. The issue of whether the registrant really has the right to do it, that is, can the registrant demand from the registrar the tools necessary to make the transfer request to the receiving registrar, to the gaining registrar? And compliance came out with an interesting answer. And the answer was, they do not consider it a compliance issue unless the right to do something is explicitly stated in the RAA as a post-expiration right. Which means in the case of a transfer post-expiration, since it is never explicitly referenced as a post-expiration right, it is not a right. And I found that a little bit shocking. And I haven't done any great analysis, but I'm wondering what other rights might not be there unless we explicitly mention them. But it does give us some guidelines that anything that we want a registrant to have the ability to do according to consensus policy must be stated explicitly, or compliance will take the view that the contract has the one-year registration has expired and the registrant does not have the right if it's not explicitly said. I see no hands and no gasps, and no one else is as surprised as I was, apparently. Any thoughts on that, or do we just factor it in as we're trying to formulate outcomes for this process?
Chris?
Mikey?
I was just trying to agree. I hit the wrong button. Sorry.
Ah, okay. factor it. Okay. All right. I was rather amazed by it because I would have thought that any right is a right as long as it makes sense to apply. But they were very explicit that if it's not stated in the REA, it's not a right post-expiration. One could question why they issued an advisory about that particular right if it's not a right, but I decided not to go down that path. Anything else on today's agenda we want to talk about? We've got a fair amount of time left. My inclination, given I've already been on about six hours of conference calls today, is to make this a shorter meeting rather than a longer one. Is there anything else anyone
that works
wants?
For me. I'm harking back to the vertical integration call, not just the last 6 hours.
Did I miss a vertical integration call?
That was yesterday.
That was yesterday for me. Okay. In terms of next meetings, I am not available next week, and Cheryl is not available. And given that the number of meetings that some of us are involved with, which seems to be on a fast path that is two meetings a week and very intensive work, my inclination is to say go back to meetings every 2 weeks and try to make sure we do enough preparation that they're effective meetings, but not try to draw us in every week. Is that agreeable to people? No checks, but no one gasped and said, horrors, no.
I typed at you.
You did. Fortnightly works for a while now, and we can review. But you and I are the only ones on the call to know what fortnight means.
I know what that means, but that's because I read Winnie the Pooh.
Actually, there are several people on this call who are educated and sophisticated.
Thank you, Mikey. I'm glad some people...
One sixth of the football season.
1/16 of the football season. For very obscure.
See, now I'm one of those who don't know how long a football season is. So,
well, hang on. Talking from the antipodes,
college, not pro.
How do
and
you
it,
even
it depends
which football?
Which football? Yes, Marika, you were trying to get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just wondering if at some point the working group would like to send some kind of timeline, for which it would like to deliver the report. I'm aware that there are a million of activities going on that, one more pressing than the other, but I'm also very aware that, we have another deadline coming up for the Cartagena meeting, and I think we have discussed that, if there are firmer recommendations, they might need to go out for another round of public comment before we actually finalize the report. So I'm wondering if we should work on a kind of timeline that maybe can dictate a bit as well, the number or the frequency of meetings, and then to get to a final report at some point.
I would say we need to set a timeline by sometime in September, but I would not try to do it at the next meeting.
Okay.
Anything else? Going once, twice. I thank you all for a productive meeting, and we look forward to what we can do at the next one. Marika, if you need any either help or you want to talk about exactly how we analyze the rest of the data offline or with a small group of people, we can pull something together.
That's fine. I think I'll have some time now as we're not meeting next week, so I can put something out to the list and see if that's workable for people or if there are any volunteers to look at the data. I know that there are some people in the working group that are very experienced at looking Excel sheets and that kind of data and how to bring it all together. And yes, Barry, I'm talking about you. So if there's anyone willing to help, that's always welcome, of course.
Well, I can play that game too, so...
Maybe you
want a small working group. Don't feel you have to slug away and just do it all yourself until we meet in 2 weeks, though.
Okay, great, thanks.
Marika, this is Barry, and I'll take a look at it and noodle it for a little bit.
Yeah, I can send you the Excel data.
That would be great.
Offering as well. You're getting swamped. You've got a major work group working with you, Marika.
Of course, we'll all do different things that can't be incorporated into each other.
Well, I'll send it on to Alan and Barry. I'll send it to. We make a little mailing list with the three of us for now, so we can at least coordinate who's doing what.
Okay.
So we're not duplicating or telling each other when we're actually going to do work and then sharing it. That might help.
I think that's a good idea, and we'll see who actually follows through and with their promises to help. We'll see if I do. Thank you all.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.